And now we have Stosh Anderson here in the studio. Hi, Stosh.
Well, good afternoon.
How are you? You can turn that any way that makes it just moves around, any way that makes it comfortable for you.
Yeah,
there
works.
You go. All right. Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
It's good to see you, as always. I'm going to pull your music up here while we're talking. There we go. And so we are here kind of talking to folks about how they got to Alaska, how they got to Kodiak, how they ended up deciding to stay in Kodiak, and why they're still here. And you've got quite a history here in the state as well as here on Kodiak.
Mm-hmm. It probably goes back to 1948.
48?
Yes. One of my dad's buddies came up to Alaska to work on the Alaska Railroad.
Oh, wow.
And so as a kid in grade school and through growing up, I always heard about Paul and his adventures, and he'd come down every once in a while to visit and show slides of Alaska. And
oh, nice.
It was always really interesting to me. And then when I was about 16, he flew down because he had an airplane, and mm-hmm. I went riding with him with his airplane. And I got out of the airplane, and I looked at Paul, and I said, "Do you know, I'm going to have one of these by the time I'm 20.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Always a goal setter you are.
And so that was, and then how do I come to Alaska? Well, in 69, I got in it. That was the second airplane I had. It was a little float plane.
Mm-hmm.
I left Duluth, Minnesota on the 1st of May after the ice went out.
Yeah.
And flew up the Missouri River into a little town in Montana and spent the night. From there, I flew to the Olympic Peninsula where my sister was living. And I spent, better part of a month in the quill scene in the peninsula area.
Mm.
And then my folks had shipped my dog out to Seattle, and so she caught up with me.
Nice.
And so then I took off, waited for a big high pressure in the Gulf, and took off to go up the coast, and flew into Canada and spent the night at a logging camp first night, and then Juneau, and I spent a couple of days there. And then I took off from Juneau one morning, and it was high overcast. I thought decent weather was decent. Well, when I flew by Yakutat, I never saw Yakutat. The weather was getting down, and by the time I got to Controller Bay, it was just flying over the breakers, about 25 feet above the water, the breakers. And there's a long, if you're not familiar with that area, there's a long spit on the east side, and it was low tide. And I flew right off the end of that spit. And then I had no references.
Whoops.
So I made it just a gradual left turn. And if you know that country, Kayak Island is just off the coast there. And I never saw Kayak Island. But I flew around, intersected the beach again, and then got into the flats. And then I could see on the chart where I was. And so there's a little rivulets in the big mud flats. So I just kept to the right of every rivulet till I came to where the stream came
back
in.
Out.
And I flew up there and landed and waited about 8 hours until I saw an airplane flyover coming from Cordova. So then I flew into Cordova and spent the night there. And FAA was pretty excited when I called Cordova.
I bet.
Because I was a little bit over on my flight plan.
Just a little bit. At least 8 hours over.
Yeah.
Did you have your dog with you when you were flying up?
No, she was. I had the back seat of the airplane had a 30-gallon drum for fuel, so she could not be with me. She's a pretty big dog.
No, was she?
And so she caught up with me in Anchorage, and I stayed there for about a week. I knew a family in Eagle River, and so then one morning when the weather was decent, I put the dog on the train in Anchorage, and then I flew to Fairbanks, and that evening I took the dog off the train.
The same railroad that Paul had helped build.
Exactly.
Interesting. Very interesting. What was your dog's name?
Debonair.
Really?
Yes.
Debonair. That's funny.
About 120-pound St. Bernard.
Nice. I didn't connect that you were a Duluth boy. From Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in southern Minnesota. I'd forgotten that you
were in... Which town?
Owatonna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, interesting. Duluth is pretty country up there.
Yeah, it was pleasant. The North Shore is pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Cold.
We lived in the very western end of Duluth, which did is, you know, just within a few hundred yards was the woods that went all the way to Canada. So, I mean, it was not like living in a big city.
No. So what year was it that you took the plane and came up here?
69. Mm-hmm. And so then I got a job right away in Fairbanks, and I was already a member of the operating engineers. That's what I did all go through college and stuff as work through the operators. And so I had a good job right away and worked with an electric utility contractor in Fairbanks. And I met a lot of people from Fairbanks, spent a lot of time that fall and winter at the university, met a lot of people. And that's how I met folks from Kodiak.
Really? At the university there?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And so they're telling me about Kodiak and everything about Kodiak. So I worked for a short time that winter up on Livengood Camp during building the haul road for the pipeline. And then that's when the lawsuits all emerged and the whole project got shut down.
I was going to say it stopped.
Mm-hmm. And it was a good thing because I think the oil companies even realized it was a good thing. They got ahead of themselves and didn't have the engineering done as it needed to be. And so that worked out. Anyway, because I met a bunch of folks from Kodiak, and so I flew down in March. I guess that would have been March of 70.
Mm-hmm.
And Dottie Holm and Norm Holm were names that I was given, so I called them up and talked to them because I was going to try to go out to Whale Island and see Oliver and Eva, which I've never met before, but just through references.
Right.
So, and Dottie was the really kind and really helpful. And along with Bruce Short's mom, introduced me to some other folks. Blake Kinnear was home from college at that time, so I met him and we did a few things together. And got on the mail plane and flew out to Whale Island.
And that's where Eva and Oliver were at that time?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They had a little cabin there before they built their big cabin. And being from Minnesota, I'm a flatlander, didn't know anything about oceans and tides and such. It was high tide at the time, and Oliver had a little float out there, so the float plane pulled up to the float, and I got off and got on the float. Well, Oliver and Eva weren't home. So they were out traveling for the day, they came back the next day. But so I'm sitting on this raft and trying to figure out, well, I'm not going to swim. It was too cold for that.
Yep.
Well, Oliver's dad had a skiff tied up to the raft, and it was swamped, but it was full of ice. And so I turned it loose and paddled it over to the shore and tied it off. Well, the tide went out. It was on the rocks, and it poked a hole in Norm's skiff.
Hello, I'm the kid from Minnesota.
That's it. But Oliver was in. He just sort of shook his head and laughed at me. And
Oliver shakes his head and laughs at people a lot.
Norm was very forgiving. We ended up patching the skiff later that spring. So that's how I met Oliver and Eva. They came home the next day to find me sleeping on their porch.
Who is this guy? That's funny. So, all right, so we're at somewhere around 1970, Whale Island. I was thinking about how different Fairbanks must have been in 69, 70 than it is certainly today or even 20, 25 years ago.
It was a much smaller community, but
pre-pipeline, real push of the pipeline days, too.
But it was feeling the pains of Hall Road and the work, and most of the work was being dispatched out of Fairbanks, and so there was a lot of strangers in town, and it was a real eye-opener coming from the Midwest, who was culturally behind either coast.
Yeah, that's a nice way to describe it. very nice way to describe it.
Especially in the 60s and 70s.
Yep. So you had some fun in Fairbanks, and so what was Kodiak like when you got here in 70, what did we figure, 71, 70?
Well, 70, that was just for
a visit.
Yeah, a visit. I spent the month of March out on Whale Island with the Holmeses, and came back to town, and then I went back up to the interior because I was working construction at that time.
Sure.
Out of the hall. And so in the process, I ended up spending some time in the Copper Center area, just 100 mile under Richardson Highway, and ended up with another fellow doing some right-of-way clearing and for the same electrical contractor that I was affiliated with. And transitioned to the token hippie out of the hall.
You know, Copper Center in that area has a way of doing that to you.
but for a few years, I mean, I had some skill sets that the hall could use.
Sure.
So they put up with my long hair and my attitudes.
That's a good thing. Times were different then, weren't they? It was interesting. So you hung out in Copper Center then for a bit, or
I used, when I wasn't working a construction job, then I'd spend time in Copper Center, and we built. I worked on a road project south of there, and then I worked in some shops in Fairbanks, and that's one of the. That's how I got back to Kodiak. Is the company I was affiliated with in Fairbanks. I had a joint venture, and we built the road between Pillar Creek and Menashka Creek. We built the dam on Menashka Creek. We built the water line and the power line goes out there. And
that's, oh, wow.
Kodiak was short on water back then because of all the shrimp. And so they were expanding the municipal water supply. So I came down to work on that job. And so that would have been in the summer of 72. And that fall, Claudia came to town as a new school teacher. And Jenny Crumley at the time, Stevens, set Claudia up as a blind date. And I guess Bob earlier today was set up as a blind date.
It seems to work well for you guys, doesn't it?
The active women in the community playing matchmakers. But it worked well. And so when we finished up that job that fall, I quit working for that company. And then I went to work with Brecken. And Brecken was leasing some of the equipment that Pacific Wagley had here. And so it was just working on the same equipment. I worked with Eddie Coe there in the shop. And then the following summer, I worked out at the rock crusher and the asphalt plant. And did that for then in the shop and for the winter. And at the time, I was the watchman out at the ram site.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
Nice.
Dr. Bob was running that operation, and it was the popcorn stand or the hot dog stand during the ram, but then after.
Out toward the entrance there? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then in the wintertime, you took the food prep stuff out and put it in one of the sheds, and that's where the watchman lived, so.
So you got to stay out there.
Mm-hmm. That was really a very pleasant place to spend.
Was that the cabins were kind of past the entrance and down into the woods there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have the parking lot, and then you go maybe 50 yards down the trail, and then there was three buildings there.
Yep.
You had the outhouses on the right.
Yep.
And then the hot dog stand, and then the storage building on the left.
I had forgotten about the hot dog stand, but I remember the storage building. Years after you had been there, another friend of mine lived in that building for a while.
Yeah, so. Cliff Davidson was there before I was, and then Cecil Rainey was there after. Cecil and Crystal were there after we moved on. And then in 74, well, we got married in the fall of 73 in Carlick.
In Carlick?
Mm-hmm. Cecil was teaching school out there.
Okay.
And he and Crystal were out there, so a bunch of us were going to go out to Carlick for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So we had several gooses lined up, and we piled all the stuff and went out to Carlick. And then
gooses as in the plains, mm-hmm. not in the I'm going to eat a goose for Thanksgiving. Okay.
Right. Gooses that provide us the ride.
Transportation.
And so we went out to Carlick and partied for the weekend and got married. And
had you sort of planned this wedding prior to going out to Carlick for Thanksgiving, or did it just...
It wasn't the main thing in the menu. The main thing was to go to Thanksgiving to visit all of, you know, a bunch of
the
us
friends.
That were friends of Cecil's. And so we just thought, we'd planned to get married, so we'd just do it on Saturday while we're out there, not make a big thing of it. So we got married on the beach in Carlick. That was fun.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Maybe a little chilly in November, but it'd be fun.
Nah, it was a bright, sunny day.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Oh, it's on the west side. Of course it was sunny. Wow. So 74, you said.
That would have been 73. So spring of 74. The pipeline was starting to go again.
Yeah.
And so we went back up to Copper Center, Claudia and I, and then we just flew around the state and played all summer and just did.
Claudia was still teaching?
She had taught that spring, but she was teaching in Kodiak here, but she resigned her position here. And so we went up there and that little cabin. It was dry at the time. Well, it had a well outside, but no toilet, so we added on to the little cabin and put a bathroom and septic system and put the well inside and got
added some amenities.
Yeah, so I had running water inside. And I still got the cabin. A friend of mine just takes care of it. And
that's nice.
Yeah, but anyway, but I haven't been there in a few years.
No, you should go back and visit.
Just life seems to just
get busy.
You get on your merry-go-round and you just keep going.
Yeah, like, whoa, well, maybe I should get off of this thing once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we went to Valdez. Claudia taught school there for a couple of years, and I went to work at the terminal and working for the oil companies.
Yeah.
Putting some money together to do other things.
Sure. Well, that's kind of what a lot of people did back then, working for the oil companies.
It was an opportunity.
Yeah. Stashing away some money.
And when we, so I would quit my job in summer, and we'd travel around and fly around the state and visit different things and just enjoy the summers, work in the wintertime.
So did you spend most of your time in the interior, do you think? Or did you go pretty much ever? Did you go down to Southeast during your summers much? Or
We went to Sitka one time to visit some friends, but most of the time in the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, little airplane was on floats and we'd fly around different places and went out west and McGrath area. And
that's one of the fun things about Alaska is just lake hopping here. If you've got a plane, it's a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, we enjoyed it. And then Cecil and Crystal stopped by and visited. And
this is in Valdez.
This is in Valdez. Well, okay. Crystal then was going to fish in Bristol Bay that summer. She'd had a relationship with the bay and she'd fished out there for a few years, but then she got a permit and a drift permit. And she was going to fish. So I went out to fish with her for the summer, and Claudia, we just left Copper. Well, my airplane was in Copper Center at the time. So we flew from there out to the bay in June and looked around, and we got Claudia a set net operation for that summer. And then I fished with Crystal for that year. And then the next, it would have been the next, Kavik would have been born that winter, because I was the house dad that winter in Copper Center. And so we were there in the summer. We were there winter. And then I loaded Kavik in the airplane and made a playpen in the back for him because he was only 6 months old at the time, 5 months old.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so we flew out to Naknek and Dillingham looking for a boat because then over the winter I'd bought a drift permit. And so in the process, I knew a fellow in South Naknek who had worked with in Valdez, and he pointed me in the direction. And I didn't care if I bought a skiff or a powerboat at the time, just so it was dependable. And up the Kwajalein River was a little, was an old Alaska Packers cannery, Diamond J.
Oh, yeah.
And it was hadn't operated since 52 when the sailboats
were in operation out there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when they went to powerboats, then it became non-functional. It was more appropriate to do the processing in Naknek.
Mm.
But it had a good marine way, so the Alaska Packers stored a lot of their scows there in the wintertime. So they had a winterman there, and so the winterman had a skiff, and I talked to his grandson. And so I flew up there and talked with Dan and Agnes Estrada. And I bought the skiff from them. Just, I looked at it, I could just see right off the bat. It was a beautiful skiff.
Mm.
It just immaculate, well taken care of. It was, you know, he took a lot of pride in it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I got looking around at the operation, and it was fun. So this was in early May, so I told Dan I'd be back in June. And so I went back, and then so we came back in June, and a friend of mine came back to help to be my deckhand for the summer. And at that, right at that time, they were launching scows, so it was a pretty interesting operation. It was probably the last operating steam donkey on the West Coast. In other words, a hand cold-fired boiler.
Yeah.
And then that operated a triple drum winch, steam winch. And that's what you...
That was a steam donkey.
Mm-hmm. The term comes from the logging industry, that donkeys for highly logging. And so they were sidetracking the scows on the sidetracks onto the carriage on the ways, and then they'd launch them. You could launch two scows in a tide if you had it organized.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you only launched one.
Just one.
But so Dan was going to retire from that. So I looked around and thought, well, this might be fun. So I went down to South Naknek and talked to the superintendent and got the job being winterman.
So you were doing that in the wintertime and doing the fishing then?
Mm-hmm, in the summer.
Okay.
So,
perfect.
So Claudia was pregnant then with our second son.
Mm-hmm.
So we hauled a bunch of stuff from Copper Center to Anchorage. We loaded up an igloo on Ween and shipped all the stuff to King Salmon.
Mm.
And then we flew out there and then ferried all the stuff from there up to Diamond J. Diamond J, there's no roads or anything. It was just an airstrip. And in the summer, you could get there on the river. And then we were wintermen there for several years. And all this time, I would come back and fish king crab in the fall. And so we always had a tie to Kodiak because we were back here every fall fishing.
Yeah.
And then once in a while, we'd come, other than that, just to visit friends. So we did that for a few years until Cabot got to be grade school age. And we, you know, Claudia was certainly capable of teaching him, but we thought the boys needed a more broader social life than just
than homeschooling and
homeschooling and just seeing the two of us. Because at the time, then that last winter we were at Diamond J, I'd fly Kavik to South Naknek once or twice a week to go to preschool.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes, once I remember one time that got really foggy, we had to land on the beach out on the outside beach and wait for the fog to raise before we could get into South Naknek, But it was a lot of fun. It was interesting spending that much time together and
make a close-knit family.
Listening to Radio Reader in the evening from KDLG.
Yeah.
By spring, you get a little bit bushy.
You're ready to go do something different.
For sure. But that was fun. Then the upriver was the village of Leavelock.
Hmm.
Which is just a real small little village. But
I don't think I know that village.
The guys in the village came down to be the crew for the ways crew for launching and pulling scows.
Sure.
So we got to meet, you know, a bunch of people from the village. And in the wintertime, we'd fly up there once in a while to socialize and for the carnival and one thing or another.
Did the river freeze up?
Were
you using that as an ice road at all or not stable enough?
No, you could travel on the river. Mm. We didn't have a snow machine at the time, so we just hop in the plane. It was easier. And so I had it on wheels most of the time. I had skis if I needed to, but wheels worked.
Mm-hmm.
In that area, in the wintertime, the wind blows enough that the lakes would all blow clean, so you could just
Could land without the skis.
You could land on the lakes. They're just ice-covered. And if some of the river bars, you could land on and stuff, too, so you could get around pretty easily.
Yeah,
but so then we moved to Leeblock, and the chief of the village sold us an acre of ground, and so we were invited to live there, so... We built a place there and lived there for about 10 years. It was real interesting.
So the kids went to school there?
They went to grade school there. And then it became time for junior high. So we just said, maybe it's time for them to see a bigger world.
Maybe.
The village was good in a lot of respects. They knew where every cookie jar in town was.
I'll bet they did.
About
how many people do you think were in the village?
On a poor fishing season, about 120. A good fishing season, about 80.
Okay. not a whole lot of people.
No, but we made good friends and spent a lot of time in steam baths and it was interesting to living in a community as a minority. I mean, that was a different viewpoint.
Not a bad view, but a good...
Mm-hmm. Good experience.
Yeah.
And still, we still have ties with many of the people.
So did you go from there right to Kodiak then, or...?
Yeah. And actually, when Bob was on the... Earlier today, he was talking about the oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring of 89, I flew over to Kodiak I had bought a house here, but I flew over here to close on the house, and I think I was one of the first people to see the first oil slick coming down the Shelikov, because it was coming, that big rip in the middle there.
Yeah.
The first, when I flew over, I noticed, okay, I see what's happening here. And so then we, in December of 89, we had Christmas in Leeblock, and then we flew over here, so we were here for New Year's Eve.
On 90.
Mm-hmm. So, and we've been here ever since.
Hanging out here. So the kids went through junior high and high school here then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, Ty was in the fifth grade.
When you moved over?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's correct.
Somewhere around there, huh?
And Kavik was in junior high and come home. First day home from school and coming home from the big school, he was just wide-eyed and excited, and he said, "And all the girls are really cute."
I'll bet that was quite a transition, though, for the kids. I mean, kids adopt well, but that's quite a change to go from a village school to a high school that's poof.
Yeah, it was, pretty big. It had some issues, but they survived.
That's good. Now, so when you came over here, what were you working at here? Were you still just going back and fishing in the Bristol Bay or crab or?
Yeah, I hadn't worked construction since, so I guess in the mid-70s.
Okay.
I'd been fishing all the time since then.
Right.
And then we were wintermen in the wintertime. And Leeblock, I helped on a couple of projects there. The village, when we moved there, didn't have electricity, and I helped put the electric utility together there and help run that and get it established. And I was always busy. Then I got involved in fish politics, and I was chairman of the NACNIC Quijack Advisory Committee for many years. And that's where I met Ron Jolin. He was chairman of the Board of Fisheries at the time. And,
mm-hmm.
Really good relationships and good people.
Good. And all that electrical experience has come in handy in your time on KEA, I'd imagine, some of that experience.
That was what I did in Valdez, too. I was in charge of all the electrical maintenance for Morrison Knudsen Company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's what I was trained for.
All right. So we've comes from Duluth and your time in Alaska with Little Bits and Kodiak. What do you say we play a song and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Kodiak?
Sure.
Okay. What would you like to play?
The first one.
Okay. You want to talk about it first or you just want to play it?
Well, that's when I met Claudia.
Yeah, well, I kind of figured you want it. All right. You're so talkative. We'll just play it. Here we go.
One, two,
there it
three,
goes.
Five.
So that was the Claudia influence, right?
Yeah.
That was significant.
Young lovers.
Yeah. So the matchmaker there was Jenny Stevens, huh?
Mm-hmm. Jenny and I, we'd known each other for about a year, and we were just good friends.
Yeah. Well, she did well.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You guys have been married now.
45 years.
45 years. That's a pretty good chunk of change there. That's a pretty good chunk of change. So we are now your life here in Kodiak.
Mm-hmm.
So you got here, it must have been spring of 89, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's 30 years or so that you've been here.
Well, I came over spring 89, but we didn't actually move back till
December, January.
Yeah, January of 90.
Okay.
January 1st, 90.
So you've been here about 30 years now, which for you guys is like serious roots because you moved around a bit prior to that.
And all the time between 70 and 90, we were here every year. And I had bought a little place that we called the Leaky Hovel down on Tagura. And I'd owned that for a good share of that time. And a lot of my friends have lived in it. We never did live in it, but it had a lot of our friends transitioning
from one place to another.
Well, from a leaky hovel to something better.
Is that building still standing?
It is.
Really?
Yes.
There have been a lot of changes on Tagura lately.
Anyway. Yeah, there's lots of stories about that. Yeah,
I would imagine. Maybe we'll have you back on sometime and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about those stories. So, you know, when you're, even though you came back to Kodiak, and but you didn't set down roots until 30 years ago or so, but what has kept you here?
Other than it's an absolutely beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
As many people who transition to Alaska, you don't have immediate family,
yeah,
bloodline family, but you have a group of friends that end up being a surrogate family,
mm-hmm,
and that's a big influence. The boys going through high school obviously make that transition, and so where they're there. When I first came back, I bought a seiner here,
mm-hmm,
and we fished that for many years. Usually other people ran it for some of the summer because I was gone. I fished Bristol Bay every year then in the summers, and I'll still do. I mean, I've got 40-some years in the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And Claudia had set it there for 38 years before she sold her site and operation. So she had a real successful site there. And so it's just a real comfortable place to live. You know, I work on a lot of boats. Bobby Schaff and I worked on projects together and built and modified boats for every winter for years and years, mm-hmm, before he's passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about doing things in Kodiak, when you're here a while, you end up knowing where every nut and bolt is in town, every hydraulic fitting.
Yeah.
It's a lot different. Like if you're in Seattle, you got to chase all over the countryside. Here, everything's within 10 or 15 minutes.
Right. And if some store doesn't have it, you know somebody who does in their shop.
Right. Yeah. And the craftsmen here are excellent.
Yeah.
And so you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. It costs a little bit more, but there's a price, but it's an acceptable price.
Mm.
And, you know, Fuller's Boatyard, Bill down there, and it's been real accommodating in the boatyard to provide an opportunity and space. I mean, I had one boat in there for 2 years in a big building, and,
mm,
and did a major reconstruction, and tend to keep pretty busy. And we've been very fortunate to be fairly successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you said, I think the extended family is the piece that keep a lot of us here. You know, you just kind of, you still have family outside, but they're outside. They're 3,000, 4,000 miles away. And
now there's not many of them left.
Yeah, that's so sad but true, yes.
But, my folks and Claudia's folks came up to her set-net camp and cycled through there for years and years. So it was a way that the families got to spend quality time together, not
sure,
just sitting and talking about what's on TV. I mean, you're working together,
right,
and being productive together. And that was a real good family relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was fun. And the bay has been successful for us, and we've been fairly successful fishing in the Gulf here. And now my son and I have we bought a boat from Norn Mullen a few years back.
So you fish the bay or around here?
That boat.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't gill net. It tenders in the bay.
Okay.
And then it fishes cod in the wintertime. And right now, Kavik and I are partners in it, and he's out halibut fishing right now with,
mm-hmm,
it. So we got, five boats in the family, and we tend to keep busy.
Sure. Boats will always keep you busy, I think. Doing one thing or another, either fixing them or being out on them.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and Claudia taught, I'll be talking to Claudia in a couple of days, but Claudia taught here
She taught here in the early 70s, yeah. And she taught in Valdez for a couple of years, and she taught 1 year at Upper Center. And then when we went to the village, she didn't intend to teach, but 1 year the teacher never showed up.
Oh, wow.
So they drafted her. And so she taught part-time, I think 1 year full-time, but most of the time half-time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was good.
Yeah.
She was able to do something professionally, but still we had a village life.
Yeah, yeah. What, so you are, you're not really retired.
No, I'm not. I don't think I'll ever retire.
I was going to say, you're not really retired. You serve on the KEA board, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still on any of the fisheries boards or any of the subcommittees?
No, I haven't been on the, I'm on a bank board, the Alaska Commercials Fishery Agriculture Bank. I've been on that board for 25 years or so. And that's fisheries related, obviously, to help finance the industry. I haven't been on since I served on the North Pacific Council in the early 2000s, but...
not since then, really.
Not since then.
Yeah.
I'm active with some of the fisheries groups, and I was one of the founding members of Alaska Marine Conservation Council, and I served on that in many positions for years, but now I don't hold any official position, but I work with that group from time to time on different issues. I've been very active with the Democratic Party, various things.
Yeah. Keeping busy.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping busy.
KEA is, it's been a real joy. I've been on that for almost 20 years now. And
wow, has it been that long?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
We get old quick.
I guess so.
And so it's that's been a real worthwhile project and really fulfilling.
Lots of things have happened in 20 years on that organization.
Both for me professionally and education-wise, mm-hmm. to use some of those skills and help the community become better, basically energy independent for our electric utility. And I'm very, very pleased and proud of the relationship that I've had with the board and the board has with management to accomplish that.
Get things done. Yeah. Well, let's play, I don't know, do you want to play? We've got about 6 minutes or so. Do you want to play that one or that one?
Queen Bee looks good.
Okay. So, do you want to introduce this song at all, or we'll back announce it?
Let it speak for itself.
Okay. Thank you. Who was that for, Stosh? Anybody in your, you know, immediate vicinity?
I think she probably knows.
I think she probably does. So I wanted to thank you for coming in and talking with me and sharing so much of your story today.
For
it's
sure.
been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun.
KMXT is a real asset to the community, and I think it would be remiss not to support the station.
Well, thank you very much. We certainly have enjoyed having all these stories on the air during the fun drives that we've been doing. So, now this next song that we're going to go out on might surprise people a little bit, maybe just a little bit.
Well, I've been a Lady Gaga fan for about 10 years. I've just always been really impressed with her upfrontness and her ability just to be brazen and just do what she wants to do.
Yeah, and she does it well, doesn't she?
And she has such a tremendous voice and a talented pianist. I just really like it.
All right. Thank you again for supporting KMXT and being on the air today. It's been fun.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to play some Lady Gaga. And I'll be back.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in all the good times. I find myself longing for change, and in the bad times I fear myself. Tired trying to feel